morning, everyone. It's a pleasure and an honor to actually be the first panel with these incredible panelists here with me. And I think it's a really exciting times. We see the bulk segment, you know, on a roll in terms of earnings, right? Ton mileage has increased. We see that actually the demand doesn't mean the supply, low order book, and we also have 2030 around the corner, and there are things to do. So I'm really curious, though, how to manage that balance, right, on serving the present and preparing for the future. So that's what I'm going to try to focus with my questions and hopefully an interactive discussion today. But before going and talking about the future, I think we are all hearing and we're very worried about the geopolitical situation and the latest developments. And maybe if I may start with that, maybe with you, Stamatis, how are you handling that? The geopolitical situation, supply and demand, safety of the crew and the vessels.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for having us here, Nicholas and the Capital Link team. So it's a great honor, as always, to be in Singapore at this great event. So geopolitics have always played a very significant role in shipping, and especially now, if I can say what is the most important disrupting factor is the Red Sea, because at any given time, our fleet, we had about 20 to 25% of our vessels crossing the Red Sea, doing various trades, connecting the United States or other parts of the world with Asia. So we were going through the Red Sea quite often, and the disruptions now, since the beginning of the year, we have decided in cooperation with our charters not to cross. So that has increased the ton mile significantly, and I believe one of the reasons why we see such a firm market in 2024 is the fact that you know, we take longer time to complete a particular voyage. Of course, the safety of the crew has been of paramount importance. It's the first thing that we thought. We never took any risks whatsoever, so no matter, you know, if we were offered armed guards or anti-missile equipment or things like that, we decided just not to to cross the Red Sea. And I believe we have been very prudent, as other companies have been victims of various attacks. Having said that, from an economical point of view, it's one of the short-term factors that have helped to squeeze the supply of vessels more and more, and that has, as I mentioned before, driven rates high and kept them at a significant point. So every little helps. And to your other question, I believe that demand is there and it will continue to be quite strong for 2024 and 25. It's just a matter of supply. So having a lead on supply, whatever that lead is, new buildings or regulations or short-term geopolitical events, I think this is going to drive the market even higher and create bigger squeezes and higher volatility. So that's what it is from our side.
Thank you. Anyone also wants to share how are you dealing with this current situation?
No, I would just echo the same comments. We've also stopped transiting through Red Sea. You know, again, as Tom said, you know, obviously tightening ton mile, which has helped the market. You know, in terms of not geopolitical, but also Panama Canal, when we talk about
exactly.
Canals, is also restricted, which has also had quite a big impact on the on the dry market. And just to mention piracy as well, has, you know, shown some increasing as well. So another area that we need to take a lot of caution about. You know, if we go further east, you know, I think we just are always aware of geopolitical risks, but shipping has always, you know, had that, and it's always added to volatility in the market. So,
Perfect. Thank you so much. Anyone else wants to share?
Yeah just Lord? Quickly on our side. I mean, we don't use much of the Red Sea. It's essentially for our trades between Canada to China. But yeah, as of December, we also elected to divert our vessels to the Cape of Good Hope. And I guess, you know, I mean, overall, when we see the market, yes, the geopolitical tension are really present. Mm-hmm. And to James' point, you know, it has always been a factor of risk that the shipping industry is dealing with. We're seeing also a lot of weather events that are impacting quite significantly. Yeah. The shipping space as well. I mean, you mentioned Panama, but there are also, you know, other areas, you know, particularly in Asia, where on our side we operate the most with cyclones and quite some significant weather event, whether it's in China or Australia, that we're also, you know, facing and dealing with. So all of this has definitely created some tension and things, you know, that we have to manage for the sake of the safety of the seafarers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up, Laura. Okay, so let's start preparing. That's the situation we have now, but we also, as I said, 2030 is around the corner and we need to start preparing about it. So, Steve, mm-hmm. How are you doing to prepare? What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, we've got a fleet of 41 vessels. They're mainly mid-age. They're not new buildings. So, you know, we're installing energy efficiency devices on all the ships, be it PBCFs, Mavis ducts. We're using, obviously, extremely good high-performance anti-fouling systems. We're making sure our propellers are properly cleaned. We've got regular hull inspections. But we're investing a lot in training of our people to ensure that they fully comprehend and have the best knowledge and skill set available to put all this into effect.
Mm. Yeah, that's very, very important. And I'm really, really glad to hear that there's more of these energy efficiency devices mm-hmm. being installed, because to be honest, I don't hear it enough, I believe.
As I said, training of the people is
really key.
Is really key.
Yeah, and what's their response when you actually, retrofit those?
I mean, obviously, we have savings on the vessels, of different percentages, but we look at the efficiency and what the expected result is going to be, and make a decision based on the cost involved. But you know, obviously, we're driven towards achieving the IMO's goal. And, you know, we will do everything we can to progress that.
Mm. Thank you. Maybe just to follow up on that, and in terms of, you know, renewing your fleet, when you are thinking on, you know, new building versus retrofit or secondhand, what's your thought there?
Okay. We've primarily got a fleet of mid-age vessels. Mm-hmm. We believe that it is more sustainable, and I've said it before, to invest in mid-age ships rather than new building. To build a ship requires the raw materials to be shipped from wherever they're shipped from, and then taken to a steel mill in wherever, which produces a large quantity of CO2. There's a large quantity of wastage involved, as I said. So we believe it is more sustainable to invest in mid-age ships and amend and extend.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's good. It's good to have different strategies.
Absolutely.
But I think what is important is to actually have a strategy. I think that's
yeah, yeah. No, we're very,
we've,
been,
really
we've been very clear. We've gone on record on it. That's mm-hmm. that's you know what we believe. But as I said, we're installing energy efficiency devices, and we're extending the life of the ships we have.
Perfect. Please.
Maybe I can add to that. You know, I think obviously at some stage we have to also build new ships. So at Berger Bulk, I think we're taking a sort of multi-pronged strategy to fleet renewal and to the environment. In fact, I call it a four-pronged strategy of attack, and I like to use the war metaphor because we are fighting a war against climate change. The other metaphor I use is sort of all hands on deck. It's a good shipping metaphor, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's the time to do sort of everything. So we have a four strategy. The first one is a little bit, as Steve said, it's making our existing fleet much more efficient, and it's using many of the technologies that Steve mentioned. The second part of our strategy is to use new technology to further improve those ships. So there's a lot of new technology coming, whether it's from better route optimization, better paint, remote ROVs on cleaning our hull. We've also added wind technology recently onto ships. We're testing bubbles underneath, adding new shaft generators. So there's a whole new, some of that is actually, you know, obviously shaft generator is not new technology. Wind is not exactly new technology. Mm-hmm. In fact, we call it back to the future because it's, you know, it's old technology, but obviously in a much better, more efficient way. So we're using those new technologies. Our third strategy is to say, look, we need to use new fuels, and that's a sort of longer-term plan. So short-term maybe is using biofuels, but longer-term, yeah, we kind of believe in a zero-carbon fuel. So we've just ordered two ammonia fuel ships, which we're very excited about. Still don't know necessarily where the fuel is going to come from or which our charterer is going to be. But, you know, I think by the time they deliver, we think the infrastructure will start coming. We were keen to take a lead on that and actually start that process. And then the fourth side of our strategy is to say, okay, whatever carbon is left, we still need to remove it. And again, it comes back to a bit to Steve's point. You know, we have a legacy fleet which is going to be around for another 25 years. We're still going to be producing carbon, whatever, unless we retrofit, which is going to be too expensive to retrofit to total new fuels for some of our older ships. So we're saying that we need to remove that carbon either through direct air carbon capture on board our ship, or looking at carbon offset or carbon capture, or, you know, on land. And we're still a strong believer that we can capture carbon elsewhere, not only on our ships, and sort of count towards it. So together, I call it the Marshall Plan. Again, my war metaphor.
Yes, pretty good ones today.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a Marine Marshall Plan, and you know, hopefully that will set us in good step for the future, not only short-term. And, again, you know, I think we can't emphasize enough the importance of making ships more efficient using those technologies he's talked about in the short-term. But longer-term, obviously, we need to look towards new technologies and zero fuel. Zero carbon.
Yeah. Thank you, James. I really want to dig into many of the details, but I need to first go to Alexander and maybe hear your views on alternative fuels for your fleet of Handys.
Yeah, I mean, as a predominantly an owner of geared, you know, smaller dry bulk carriers, which is, you know, a large swathe of the dry bulk market is represented by those vessels that, and tramping around, the challenge is getting a payback from all these initiatives that have been discussed just now. Yes, we've, of course, rolled out all these low-hanging fruit energy-saving devices on our ships, the PBCFs, WDs, etc., the coatings. And we're working with technology partners on understanding and keeping abreast of what we could potentially do in carbon capture, wind. But these numbers work on the larger ships, not necessarily yet work on the smaller ships, and that's a challenge that we face. But I'm a strong believer that these technologies will develop very quickly and increasingly quickly. So we need to stay focused on those, but at the same time, you know, I think our stockholders and our other stakeholders are realistic about the time it might take, and there probably isn't a great impetus for us to be a first mover in terms of financial risk in some of these leaps into very expensive new technology. In terms of alternative fuels, I think, you know, the real rollout of that in volume has to be driven by a regulatory change, which is hopefully gathering momentum. We're trialing biofuel wherever we can, and the key to that is close cooperation with charterers. So to have charterers who share similar vision for reducing emissions and who are interested and have access to biofuel, and also a network of it, because of course we're tramping around, we're not just calling in two ports in the world, we're calling at hundreds of ports in the world where this stuff isn't necessarily available. So that's another challenge for our sector. So we haven't laid down new building orders in a big way. We've done one or two here and there opportunistically, but we continue to believe in reducing the average fleet age through divesting of older tonnage and increasing, lowering our carbon intensity that way, rather than going heavy into the new build market. And we'll see with interest what James and others do on pioneering zero emission ships.
Thank you, Alexander. Maybe to you, Laure, as Rio, how do you see that decarbonization? How do you work and partner with the ship owners to advance this?
Thanks, Christina. I think from a charterer point of view and a large mining and metal company like Rio Tinto, just want to put in perspective, in terms of emission reduction, what we're battling with. If you look at our Scope 3 emissions, so which includes, our customers, it's about 580 million tons of CO2 that we represent. We are with our customers, essentially on the steel industry and the aluminium making. Shipping is representing just a little bit more than 7 million tons, so which is basically the paradigm that this industry has to face overall. But nonetheless, Rio has quite some ambitious targets to reduce its shipping emission, the net zero by 2050, and then being reducing the carbon intensity by 40% by 2025. We're on track to deliver this ambition, as well as introducing net zero fuel vessels, 10% of our fleet as part of the First Mover Coalition. That will be a net zero capable, and hopefully using ammonia or green methanol that will be available in the market by then. So we're ship owners as well. We have 17 vessels in our portfolio out of 250 vessels that we are using at any point in time in the industry to move our product inbound and outbound. And for this, we have also, a clear strategy to reducing our emissions. First and foremost is the fuel efficiencies that everybody has mentioned. We've tested and installed actually the most, efficient solutions on board of our 15 of our, actually of our 17 vessels. The last two are benefiting from the changes this year as we speak. And from there, we've been able to achieve just by this a little bit more than 16% with the accumulation of all these ESDs that we've installed, which help us understanding, what works, the cost of it, but also, the return on the routes that that we're using. We're working on larger sizes as well, wherever possible, increasing our Newcastlemax fleet, but also, looking at a routing optimization. But what we've done as well, to continue to push the limit, I'm still asking, the industry, what is the full potential of the, this fuel efficiencies? And I was discussing with some of you in the audience about, helping us collectively at the industry level to understand what is the full potential in terms of vessel design, sizes, but also, technologies that are available. We've been testing, some of this less, proven technologies through our pioneering portal launched in 2022. 70 propositions came back that we analyzed with the Maersk Mc-Moller Center, and actually we're installing two of them on our vessels this year. But what we've also, to make sure that it's not just independent, just one of trials, what is important for us as well is that we've been negotiating with this service provider an opportunity to actually, if I was to bring, let's say, ship owners next to me, on board of adopting these new technologies, that we also can have, preferential prices, which is a win for the ship owners, for the charterer, but also the service provider that have, you know, a larger book. So that's the kind of initiative that we're fostering on the fuel efficiency, which is the first and foremost and the action now. The second part of our plan is really on the transitional fuel. We've been using biofuel, leveraging as well the Rio Tinto use of biofuel wherever, you know, we can in accessing, you know, this solution, which remains expensive on the shipping point of view, and we'll come back to the cost and how to split the bill later on.
Yes.
And as well as LNG. LNG is available. We have nine Newcastle Maxes. Shortly, the nine will come in our portfolio by June this year, which we are powering also on an LNG basis, which help as well reducing the emission. But we're looking to the future, which are basically the new the net zero fuel, whether it's ammonia or green methanol. For this, you know, I don't think the industry has a demand issue, because we're seeing a lot of, particularly on the container side, you know, a lot of dual fuel methanol vessels. The real, you know, issue that the industry is facing is the availability of the green fuels. Only, you know, 1 million tons of green methanol is available out of the 100 million tons of methanol produced. And ammonia, there is no green ammonia produced. So this availability of the fuel is really critical. And of course, you know, the affordability, how we can basically abate $200 of cost of carbon across the value chain. This is also, you know, the main challenge that this industry is facing, and what are solutions that we can collectively work together to, I call it, split the bill, mm-hmm. because only one partner cannot take the bill and pay it for itself, whether it's chartering, ship owners, and so on. So we have all, I guess, to put some money on the table and find mechanism to split the bill, highly supported by market-based measure.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Lord. That goes back to a comment that was made yesterday in the opening ceremony, right? That we need a business case or, you know, regulation for the ship owners to be able to move, which is totally, totally right. Stamatis, anything new from your side in terms of what's your strategy to decarbonization?
Yeah, well, when we started discussing about new technologies, the first new technology for us back in 2018-19 was basically the scrubbers that, you know, the world was testing the waters on that. And back in the day, we decided to install scrubbers with in cooperation and partnership with our charter. So whatever scrubbers we installed in the first phase, it was co-funded and profit sharing with our biggest charters at the time. Recently, we were and we are the only, the first and only Greek shipping company to participate in the European Union Safecraft program, which is basically a hydrogen-powered vessel. We're going to retrofit one of our existing ships, and we're now considering either a 2012 or a 2014-built ship in order to apply hydrogen propulsion with shaft generators and all associated with that. It's a 4 or 5 year, so it's a 4 year project, and we expect to deliver that sometime between 2025-2026. That's a revolutionary. It's funded by European Union, and I believe that is going to show some breakthrough, you know, in marine propulsion. To all the other points, we use biofuel a lot. We were the first Greek shipping company to test biofuels in the summer of 2021. So I think it was July or August 2021 that we used biofuels on our ships. And we continue doing so, and we're also installing all the energy-saving devices. As far as alternative fuels are concerned, we are not convinced yet. I wish that we could take a leap of faith like Berge Bulk is doing, and I certainly applaud that. We cannot do that yet. We want to see what the prevailing technology is going to look like, and then we will decide on that. For the time being, the smaller research and development team that we have in our office is dealing with the Safecraft, and we're just going to be developing that for the next few years and see how that is going to take us, which I believe this will also be revolutionary as far as we're concerned.
Very, very exciting. Are you happy with the returns of the energy efficiency devices that you're getting in your vessels?
Actually, yes. So we have tested everything, except, of course, the optimizations and all that that we started in 2015. Everything else we started in 2018. What I can say works impressively so far is the silicone coatings, the new generation silicone coatings. We recoated the 2006 built Capesize recently, and we have seen about 27% improvement. 27 is colossally impressive. I have no words to express how that is, you know, adding value to the environment. And also on the ships that we did like a year and a half ago, we have only seen about 2% coat reduction within a year to a year and a half. So coat by itself goes a long, long way to improve efficiency and reduce consumption. So, you know, having operating middle-aged ships, like a lot of the panelists here, I believe that what we invest the most out of all the energy-saving devices is the coatings that make a very impressive result, especially on Capes and the Newcastle Maxes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. James, are you happy with the wind wings you installed, you retrofitted in your vessel? How is that going in terms of emissions cutting?
Yeah, thank you. Look, we've just done one voyage, so I would say it's still early days, but we're super excited at the first stage. I mean, I think first thing to say is quite a big piece of kit. These wings are 38 meters tall above the deck, and they sit on a pedestal which is nearly 5 meters. So it's a big, big piece. And I think the first thing to say is that, you know, they're operating well, safely, which was obviously the primary concern. Our crew are super excited as well. They love it. They all want to get on the ship and sail it. So that's another sort of positive side. And I think the, you know, the first impressions are that it says what it says on the packet, as it were. So we're excited. I mean, it obviously depends on routing. I think there's still more trials to do in terms of optimum routes, where wind is best, etc. We'd love to try it on the Australia route soon. Which is obviously less windy than some, but you know, I think one of the positive signs of these particular wings that we have is that they work in kind of low winds as well. They're very efficient in terms of wind. So you know, I think it's a positive, you know, very positive start. We've also testing other versions of wind as well. So.
Very good. How did you find the collaboration and the support from, you know, governments, flags, and to make this happen with the wind wings, and then it will lead to my next question: is what do we need more of to help you?
Yeah, look, I'll give DMV a plug as well, because they supported us through the process. Not an easy one, super complicated. You know, the issues like observation and kind of safety in terms of observation and how we were going to control that was a time-consuming exercise. So, you know, been difficult in that respect. In terms of support, I would say, in our case, very minimal from, you know, external. So this is a project we've taken on ourselves, and, you know, and we've had to, we've worked. And I suppose, you know, Law mentioned kind of splitting costs and stuff. I mean, I think we feel that we've had to take kind of initiative. You know, we'll take the savings ourselves, because, you know, yet difficult to get somebody to help pay for it. You know, it does lead on to eventually, and I think we're probably all in agreement around a sort of carbon price and how we can make effectively make fuel more expensive so that these devices will be even more sort of economic. But for that, I suppose we need a premium fuel price, and you know, that would obviously help on a bigger picture. So we're very supportive of some form of carbon pricing and effectively make our fuel more expensive.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Steve, any views on what would you like regulatory bodies and governments to help the ship owners with?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, all assistance is appreciated.
Yeah.
But I echo what James has point to really sort of fast-track the road to decarbonisation. Some sort of pricing mechanism, carbon pricing mechanism, is really the way forward to make fuel more expensive, to accelerate the whole of the shipping industry to move towards decarbonisation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we mentioned, I think we've all said biofuels, and we're ready to use biofuels today. But, frankly, customer is not ready really to pay for that biofuel in a market basis. So, we have a solution. Yes, there's shortage. It's not easy to find a biofuel, but, I think we've all tested it. It works. And we just want to start using it as much as we can. Difficult to find someone who's prepared to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would echo that as well. Yeah. If we can, get charters to put their hand in the pocket a little bit more and work with us and in partnership with us, that would be much appreciated, much better.
Yeah. Well, that's we need to work on that. Laura, any comment to that?
Absolutely. And I can give the example of actually where it works and where we've been using it across Rio Tinto is in the U.S., essentially through the Inflation Reduction Act, which is, again, market-based measure that the U.S. have deployed to also, access in some, not everywhere, actually, in California that has been quite successful in using biofuel. And basically, we've equipped our first mine in Boron, which is in California, is completely operated out of biofuel. And again, it's a combination of market-based measures, but also, us contributing and again, fostering the development of biofuel in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So when there is basically all this. Planet alignment as well and in terms of how to split the bill across the value chain, then it works. The adoption starts to take off. Mm-hmm. So that's what we will want to see more of. And to foster, the production. Because biofuel, as we know, there is quite, some shortages as well in terms of feedstock.
Yes.
So it's already something, so we have to basically encourage it. But overall, that will not solve, the overall shipping requirements in terms of fuels. So we also have, to look in other directions.
Mm, thank you. Alexander, any views from your side?
Yeah, I think a lot's been said already, but domestic level regulation isn't particularly effective or helpful. It really needs international collaboration, global carbon pricing. I think that's a key to making expensive green fuels competitive against conventional stuff, and then incentivizing clean upstream energy production. I think that's very important. Ammonia and methanol are only zero emission if the method of production is also green. So there's a lot to be done there, and a lot of intervention subsidies will have to come into it too. I think a lot is in motion already. There are very encouraging signs, but this is going to take a while.
Thank you. Looking at other industries, and for example, aviation, nowadays you are able to book carbon neutral flights. Right, and it's nice to think about that concept in shipping. And I know that someone has tried something about that. James, can you share anything from Bergy?
Yeah, as I mentioned, as a sort of fourth part of our strategy is to try and capture carbon. And as I mentioned, either on shore, on ship or on shore. So, we still believe strongly in. Trying to capture carbon, elsewhere out of shipping, it's going to be more cost-effective than us actually capturing it on board. So we've been trying to do that, and also through that process offsetting. So we've committed our fleet to be by 2025 to offset all our voyages. We recently did an offset voyage with one customer. I would say offset is still obviously controversial. They're different, a lot of different views on it, including with IMO. Recently, just in the last couple of weeks, ST, the science-based SBTI, came out and said, actually, we may work towards using offsetting for scope 3 emissions, which I think is very positive. There was immediately a lot of sort of pushback on that, and one of the problems with any of these sort of voluntary carbon credits is there's always a lot of naysayers and a lot of pushback. But I think the reality is that, you know, we need to do something. We need to do something today. You know, I have a couple of levers to reduce my carbon. I can either make my ships more efficient, I can go slower, you know, or I can somehow offset the carbon that I'm using. That's the only thing I can do today. Eventually, we'll get to zero carbon ships, but as of today, that's all I can do. So we've committed to plant trees, and we're trying to encourage our customers also to sort of come along with this journey, as I would encourage everyone here to be offsetting their flights when they fly to Singapore. Again, you know, whichever offset you choose may not be the perfect one. People may say that it's not as good as anything, but you know, it's I strongly believe it's better than nothing. And we do have a kind of voluntary market. We also have much more expensive CDRs that we're also kind of investing in terms of direct air carbon capture and stuff that you can really prove. But even when we consider sort of methanol or biomethanols in the future, you know, they are a form of offsetting fuel. You know, we're growing a product and then we're processing it and making it into a fuel which we can burn, which then puts CO2 up into the atmosphere. So it's a form of offsetting. So I think the more we can do with that, the better. I think it offers us a solution for today as well.
Thank you. Please,
Stamatis. If I can add to that, well, as far as the planes are concerned, there's been technological evolution, not just on the engines, but also on the fuselage. So, you know, the last 10, 15 years, they've been building planes that are lighter with more carbon materials and all that. I really haven't seen any carbon, ships altogether to make them lighter. So the only improvement is actually on the engine and on the fuel itself. And on the planes, I haven't seen anyone testing ammonia or anything alternative on the planes, and I wouldn't want to be on the first.
On SAF and renewable fuels on planes.
But
there are less options, yeah.
Of course, and that's the thing. And I believe that the shipping industry is being cornered to be the guinea pig on all these alternative things. And I wish we will come to that point where we will be in a position to be like that. But in the meantime, let's be creative on the existing vessels and also to offset, like James just said. I think that's pretty critical. We tried carbon capturing ourselves to try to develop all these current solutions. And all the time that we're looking for carbon capturing on the ships, even though we're very open and we are in active discussions with many providers, we just hit the roadblocks. I mean, what are you going to do with the carbon? You're going to left that. There's no place to dispose of it or unload it or whatever. So it's just still a little bit challenging, you know.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Time is running, and I really want to touch upon safety as a key aspect in all this journey, the decarbonization journey. And maybe Steve, what are your views on, are we ready to train the crew and the shore personnel enough to go along with us in this journey?
I mean, the safety of the vessel and the crew is paramount. I mean, that's at the forefront of everything we do. In terms of training, yeah, we're investing in training our crew. But you know, the industry as a whole can do a lot more to assist us and make sure that the crew we have are trained to the best of the abilities we have. Yeah. It's all about the crew. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're the most important. You know, yeah. They sail our ships. We trust the crew with our assets. So it's important that we invest in training them properly.
Thank you. Alexander, any views from Taylor yourself?
Well, I echo the importance of that. I think transparency and reporting is one of the areas where, in the absence of other things, we can drive change through putting all our data out there, whether it is emissions but also safety KPIs. And it's very encouraging to see more and more shipping companies, not just listed ones, even private ones, putting their data out there. And I think that that's a really important thing at the moment, to drive safety culture, and also to try and drive change in the way that we decarbonize.
Thank you. Any other first comment from
I think from our perspective, what we see is we clearly anticipate that the future will be more complex to deal with, and the new fuels, new practices, you know, will insert more complexity that we need to deal with. But when we look where we're starting, or where we are today, it's still, you know, 215 fatalities reported in 2022, with basically across all shipping. There is, you know, more than 6,000 violations of working and living condition at the seafarers level, and we are not yet in the complexity of what is upcoming, you know, with the future fuels and so on. So there is a real need, you know, for call for further actions. There is things, you know, that are done, but also, you know, being more, you know, bold into making a change on the safety and the welfare of the seafarers. There will be a need of 800,000 of seafarers, you know, training to actually go, you know, through that transition, energy transition. But again, let's be also very honest with ourselves. The starting point of where we are today is not acceptable. So there is also, you know, this uplift that we need to work across the industry. And for us, you know, is we made a clear choice as well to go, you know, and partner only, you know, with what we call the designated owners and operators that will be basically enforcing and uplifting safety and practices. So to really charter with them.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So we are out of time, but I mean, I think that certainly from what we have heard, we have our hands full. I mean, it's safety, transparency, how to deal with the current market demands, how to prepare for the future. But to be really honest, when I hear leaders like you, you know, your commitment, the actions that you are already taking today and even before, I'm hopeful that we will manage. With that, I would really like to thank everyone. Alexander Slee from Taylor Maritime, Stamatis from Synergy Maritime, Laure from Rio Tinto, Steve from Lila Global, James from Bergevalk. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.